Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at the temperatures. The temperatures are a little better today. They're heading back to the positive side of zero. I think it was about 7 degrees outside as I walked over from my other office to the radio station, and it felt like a heat wave almost. But what affected that cold temperature or that cold weather have on our plants? We'll talk about that today with a couple of guests. Lisa Johnson. Hey, Lisa. Nice to have you back.
Hey. Nice to be back. Thanks.
She is a UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. It's always great to have her come by. And Brian Huddleston back. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Good morning, Larry.
Dr. Deff, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. So we three will be presenting together, and they'll be doing some individual things as well, at next weekend's Garden Expo in Madison. And we have 10 pairs of tickets to give away today. And we'll give those to the first 10 people who have a question for us today. Don't call Jill Nadeau, our producer, and say, Jill, I want 2 tickets. She'll say, no. Do you have a question? If you have a question, yes. Okay. So what gardening questions do you have? Are you wondering about the effects of winter weather on your garden? Love to hear from you. Give us a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. Well, those super cold temperatures, you think there's going to be a problem with our plants because of those temperatures? Lisa, may I start with you?
Yes. That's the short answer.
Okay.
I am expecting some dieback. And it's not just that the temperatures were cold. It's that they were very warm. And particularly our woody plants, I had reports of lilacs actually starting to leaf out, little tiny leaves. And if they weren't leafing, the buds were swelling. And then to go from that kind of temperature into this
25 below or whatever.
Yeah, I'm expecting some issues.
Do the wind chills have an effect? I mean, is the temperature itself the whole culprit, or can wind chills?
Well, on conifers, definitely wind chill. Any kind of wind that's cold and drying is going to have an effect. But other than that, not really. You know, cold temperatures certainly.
Yeah. Well, Brian, what about disease? I'm wondering, did we kill off some of those pathogens that are sitting out there?
There may be some die off, but we usually don't consider for most of the disease-causing organisms that we see commonly here in the state that it will have a huge effect on the amount of overwintering structures for those organisms. Where I will be curious, we have one disease called southern blight where the pathogen is a little bit more subtropical or tropical, and we used to not have a lot of carryover of that organism, 20, 30 years ago, because our winters tended to be more consistently cold. That one tended to get killed out from the weather, and it's recently with warmer winters it's tended to survive relatively well, but I'm wondering whether we'll kill some of it off this year with the cold temperatures. Thing of it is, we got a nice blanket of snow before those cold temperatures came in, so there will be some insulation of the soil, so they may not have experienced these really cold temperatures.
So the snow acts as an insulation, of course, as you say, but can it cause damage as well, broken limbs and so forth? Lisa?
I don't know about broken limbs necessarily, but certainly if there is dieback, then probably that won't be expressed until this next year. The other thing that we may see is things leafing out as if they are fine and then dying back because there's been vascular damage. The question I've been getting is about emerald ash borer and whether there's going to be any effects with that. And our entomologist says there will probably be some, but they're not affected by wind chill. And also, it depends on, where the plant is located. Is it out of the wind? Is it in a protected area? Is it in the middle of a forest? So, unfortunately, probably the emerald ash borer is not going to be, hugely affected.
Going to kill a few of those little devils.
Yeah, a few of them. More like the gypsy moth that has its egg mass on the outside of the bark.
So the gypsy moth might go, or at least some of them?
Yeah, you know, we haven't had very high populations now for a number of years, except in some certain pockets.
Yeah.
And actually, the state is no longer going to be having that. I'm trying to remember the name of the program, whether it's slow the spread or... At any rate, they're not doing that, at least in some areas, anymore.
Oh.
So we weren't able to get some funding.
Brian, you were going to add something.
Yeah, I was going to say probably the one place that I would be a little bit concerned about snow load might be on Thuya. So white cedar.
Oh, yes.
Those oftentimes
the
tend to get loaded with snow sometimes, and then it'll bend the branches. And depending upon how long that load stays, they may not spring back.
That's a very good point.
And then I'm worried because we're getting into the 40s with rain, and depending upon when that stops, we could have a lot of ice, and that could actually load up on the branches, and then we might get some breakage from that.
Ugh. Well, if it isn't one thing, it's another.
Yeah. Well, I have to also reiterate what Lisa said about the fact that some of these plants may look normal when they leaf out in the spring and then they may collapse. We saw that several years ago when we had some kind of funky weather. And that effect actually went through the entire growing season and actually into the next. Some plants were just slightly injured and they limped along and then finally gave it up after a period of time.
Mm. Yeah, when you have that vascular damage when it's nice and moist in the spring, sometimes the damage isn't expressed right away because even though it's compromised, it can kind of, like you said,
take
limp along.
Yeah.
And then once it gets hot and dry,
there she goes.
There she goes.
And then I get a lot of samples of dead branches coming in that where people think it's a disease when it's really physical damage due to the weather.
Well, we have every line filled, so let's take some calls here. Marcia in Racine, we will give you a chance. Hi, Marcia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I have a dear friend that gave me a cutting off of a cactus. I'm not sure exactly what the type or, you know, species is of the cactus. I immediately took it home. She said, just put it in some dirt. But I went a little bit further, and I bought some specialty cactus dirt and put it in a pot. And it's not showing that it's doing so well, and I don't want to go back to my friend and say, you know, what can I do? Can you give me some hints, please?
Can you tell me the symptoms? Is it like off color and mushy?
It's off color, and the one part of it feels hollow to the touch.
Okay.
Could be a rot problem of some kind.
Yeah, that could be.
Wish I knew what kind it was. You know, a lot of times when you get a cutting off a cactus, you can, depending on the cactus, you just let it sit for a week or so and let it sort of...
Callus off,
and then put it in soil.
Yeah, sometimes... can you tell whether it's put down any roots at all?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm told that it flowers at night. I'm sure it's going to take off in the summer if I can get that way, you know, get out onto my porch, but I'm just concerned about it.
Yeah. Sometimes with cacti, I will use a little bit of rooting hormone, depending on, like Larry said, some of them will just callus off and actually start to produce air roots, and you can plant them up. Others, I think the type that you have, I'm not so sure that it will do that. Did you let it sit before you put it in soil and watered it?
Yes.
You did. Okay.
And how much have you been watering?
Right.
I watered it initially when I first planted it, and then probably a second time. I haven't done a whole lot of watering.
And
it's by a windmill. I don't know if that makes a difference with the air.
How long in between waterings?
I would say like maybe 3 weeks.
Okay. So that's
Certainly haven't overwatered it. That's good.
Right.
How cold is it by the window?
That was another thought I had as well.
Okay. So maybe take it away from the window?
Yeah, you can try that. I hate to be negative, but once it gets mushy, and especially if it's brown and mushy, that's not a good sign. But try taking it away from the window. That would be a good place to start.
Marcia, you can blame me. You can just say... Larry Mueller told me a week or two ago that I should do things this way, so I went ahead and did them, and then the plant died. So is there any chance I could get another piece from you?
I don't know if I want to go that far.
All right. Well, you got nothing to lose. Leave it sit, and I maybe pull it away from the window, and if you've got some rooting material, you can apply that, and just see what happens. Just see what happens. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Well, let's go to Brian in Appleton. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question, a couple of questions I have, is about horseradish.
Okay.
I planted out a couple of roots last fall, and I'm curious on when's the soonest that I should be able to harvest the horseradish. And is there something I could do to maybe the soil around it to help the plant grow?
I don't think you'll have problems with the plant growing. A lot of people kind of treat this as an invasive. Usually it spreads pretty well.
Rapidly.
I'm sorry to say I'm not a big horseradish person, so really I don't know exactly when you can harvest it. But I do know that you want the roots to be of decent size, so I would expect you'd need to, check it during the season, but probably it's going to take a season, I would think. But I don't know for sure.
Be very careful with it, because
it does spread.
I did what you did, Brian, many years ago. I planted a couple of horseradish plants, and then soon I had about a third of an acre. of horseradish, so it's an invasive kind of plant.
Putting them in a container or a raised bed might be the way to go.
Might be a way to go. You might even think about that this spring.
Maybe dig the thing up and
and put it in a pot and let it go from there. Yeah, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And on to Lydia in Muskego. Your turn. Hi, Lydia.
Hello, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I introduced it as have a lot of mature black walnut trees on our property, and I know that you and your guests know that that isn't really conducive for a green thumb.
No.
Depends on the particular plant, but if you're trying to grow tomatoes, it's kind of a death sentence in many instances.
Brian actually has an awesome fact sheet on his website that lists plants that will tolerate the toxin for the black walnut and others that definitely won't. It's hard to find research that isn't semi-anecdotal on this subject. I don't think there's been a whole lot of trialing work done on it, but generally, I think we've got a pretty good list in your fact sheet.
But that is actually anecdotal information well, so take it with a grain of salt. What are you trying to grow?
May I ask if horseradish is on that list?
Probably not specifically. I'd have to go back and take a look. I don't remember.
There's a lot of plants
on that list. but I would check it out. If you go to my clinic website, which is pddc.wisc.edu, and in the main menu, there's a fact sheets tab. Just click on that and select all to get the alphabetical listing. And look under black walnut toxicity. You can pop up that fact sheet. And it's a two-pager, and it describes the problem on the first side. And then on the back, there's this table that has sensitive and tolerant. And you can check to see whether horseradish is there. If it's not there, that means either we didn't find any information about that plant or there's conflicting information.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Did you get Lydia?
I was actually asking if hay baling would be a possible solution for this environment.
As long as it's not near the drip zone of the plant, because when the water drips off the plant or the tree, then you can have a small amount of juglone coming off. So you just want to sight it away from the tree canopy.
All right. Does that help?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling, Lydia. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County, and Brian Huddleston, Director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jill tells me we still have four pairs of tickets for Garden Expo, and we'll be talking about Garden Expo coming up and a whole lot more. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Dave Potratz, our engineer. You are listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Lots of callers online for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my two guests, Lisa Johnson and Brian Huddleston. And we'll go right back to the phones now and to Nancy in Burlington. Nancy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about Concord grapes. We have probably six plants, and they are between 7 and 11 years old. And my husband is the one who does the trimming. And we've had amazing amount of grapes typically, and last year we had none. And we didn't know if there was something unusual with last year in the weather conditions, or did he possibly trim them at the wrong time?
Did he trim them at the same time he usually does?
He did.
Okay.
And I wish he was with me because I could tell you, he could tell you when that was. I don't know. I don't know exactly when, but I know, yeah, we've never had a problem before.
Yeah, then probably not a pruning issue if he's been consistent when he prunes and you've had fruit before.
Yeah, and, you know, Concord grapes will prune even if you, or they'll flower even if you don't. But did you see flower clusters?
We did, yes.
Okay.
And then nothing, so
then
I don't know.
Did you have a lot of rain when they were flowering?
Oh, that is such a good question, and I don't remember. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm betting there was a lot of rain.
Right. Yeah, given our summer and where you're located in southern Wisconsin, we had a ton of rain, and I believe grapes are bee pollinated. I might be wrong about that, but if they are, then if you get a lot of rain, the bees just won't come out, and they won't pollinate, so that might be part of the problem as well.
There's a good fact sheet called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's one of our A-series publications through the Learning Store, and you may want to take a look at that. So if you go to Learning Store, all one word, learningstore.uwex.edu, and then just in the search line, type in grapes, and then look for this publication called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. That's an excellent publication.
It's a really good one. Nancy, does that help?
So much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, let's try another caller. How about Angie in Dubuque, Iowa? Hi, Angie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about Sephoria leaf spot. I had it in my raised bed last year, and I was wondering if there is something that I can do this year to treat that bed, or do I need to move my tomato plants completely?
So this is Sephoria leaf spot on tomato?
Yep.
Yes. If you have little bits of leftover plant debris from last year in your soil in your bed, that's going to be a source of spores for this coming year. So normally a recommendation is do as good a cleanup as you possibly can to get as rid of as much of that material as possible, and then to rotate away to another area in your yard. Again, depending upon environmental conditions, that may or may not work, because if we get really wet conditions, the spores are airborne, so they can be blown around. And if you've got a lot of this organism around, if it's wet, you're going to see disease no matter what. You might want to look into a variety that's rated as resistant for the leaf blights, not necessarily late blight, that's kind of another story, but there are a couple of leaf blights, including Septoria leaf spot, that you can find resistance to. The problem oftentimes with those varieties is that the taste of the fruits may not be particularly good. Although some of the newer cherry tomatoes have pretty good resistance and they're pretty flavorful, so that might be a situation.
Yeah.
Are you out in the country or are you in the city?
Out in the country.
Okay. What you may want to do on that bed where you had problems last year is make sure you do put a layer of mulch over that soil, because that'll provide a physical barrier to keep any spores that are being produced in the soil from getting up into the air. And I would also mulch under your tomatoes where you put in the new set this coming growing season as well. And then space really well. So if the plants get wet, they dry rapidly. You have to have wet leaves for this organism to infect. And then good pruning. Prune out the suckers, prune up from the bottom. You want good air circulation, so if the plants do get wet, they dry rapidly. And that should help you a little bit. And then there are fungicide treatments, but at that point, if you think you need fungicides, go to a local farmer's market and buy some tomatoes. It's a real hassle to use fungicides to control this disease.
Especially on edible
plants.
Yeah,
on edible plants.
I like to recommend
there are things you can use. But again, I tend to steer folks, homeowners, away from those sorts of treatments.
Yep. There you go, Angie. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, John in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hi. I was wondering what I could do to help strawberries survive this winter. I planted some this last spring, kind of late spring, and I think around November or early December, I covered them under about a foot of straw, and I was wondering if that was about what I should have done, or if there was something else I should do in the future.
Well, I'm glad that you mulched. The problem is that probably that's a bit much. Usually 2 or 3 inches at most is about what you want to have on strawberries. The other thing is that it was so warm, I'm wondering if there's going to be mold issues under sure. there. And then it got so cold. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out. You've got a couple of factors against you, but you did absolutely the right thing by mulching, but next year be a little more.
When would you mulch? Would you wait for the first?
You wait for the first freeze, and then you put on your mulch. The idea with the mulch is that you want stuff to be frozen and stay frozen. The problem is it didn't freeze for a long time.
I would be inclined to watch the weather in the spring as it begins to warm up, and it looks like we're not going to get in any cold snaps. I would get the bulk of that mulch off as quickly as possible, because that's going to retain a lot of moisture. And from a disease standpoint, those moist conditions tend to be very favorable to diseases. And strawberries tend to get a lot of root and crown rots.
Yeah.
And if you keep the soil overly moist, you can run into problems with those.
And since we've got a huge snow load on top of the straw, too, that'll add some moisture.
Yes.
There you go. There you go, John. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go to Christina in Glenwood City next. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I've got two questions. One of them is I have a container garden in my lower level. Everything's doing well other than the bell peppers have little white insects on them, and I'm wondering what can I do organically to get rid of them.
Do those insects fly?
I guess I didn't notice them flying.
You would notice if they were white flies, because you disturb the plant and little clouds of the things come up. So I'm guessing you've got mealybugs. Are they kind of in the crotches of the plant, you know, where the stem meets the trunk and underneath the leaves?
Yes, however, they do go onto the fruit itself and the leaves.
Okay. Okay, so mealybugs. You can use something like neem oil. That would be, I mean, since it's an edible crop, I guess I would just try, first of all, washing off with water. I don't know that that's going to be completely effective, but harvest as much of the fruit as you can and get it, you know, out of the way, and then try the neem oil. That can work. If you just have a few of them, you can even go in with some rubbing alcohol and a Q-tip and just touch the wet Q-tip to the insect or the egg mass, and it'll turn brown. And so you can try that. Yeah, that's the end of that. The problem is, of course, that the crawlers are very small when they're young, so you might have to do that several times. Also, they can infest root systems, so you might want to just check a little bit at the base of the plant and see if there's anything there.
All right. Christina, does that help?
No, the only thing I would suggest that if you're not certain exactly what it is, if you can take a digital photo, you could send that to PJ Leash, who's our insect diagnostician, and he could do a digital diagnosis. And I won't give out his email on the air, but you can send the photos to me, and I will forward them on to him. So if you send it to pddc@wisc.edu, you can send photos, and I can forward insect ones on to PJ. He can do a diagnosis with photographs really, really well. You're welcome to send disease photos to me as well. Because a lot of what I have to look for is microscopic, I'm less successful in doing diagnoses from photographs.
There you go. Thank you so much, Christine. Did we get everything?
Actually, I have one other question.
Yeah.
I have a 35-year-old rubber tree. It's pot-bound, and so it's beginning to drop some leaves, mm-hmm. and I was thinking about doing, is it called air layering, where you can cut a slice crossways and then put a root starter and moss around it?
Yeah, I'm not sure how well that'll work with rubber tree because of all the latex production, but you can certainly... I would try it on a smaller branch first rather than the main branch. Otherwise, I would suggest repotting it and putting it in a pot that's no more than 2 inches larger in diameter than the old pot, and either scoring the roots on the outside of the root ball lightly with a razor blade, or trying to just fluff those roots out a little bit.
There you go. Thanks so much, Christina. Appreciate your call. And our producer, Jill Nadeau, tells me that we have no more pairs of tickets. We've gone through 10 pairs of tickets for Garden Expo. And let's just take a minute or two here to talk about Garden Expo. It's next week, Saturday.
And Friday.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yep. Yes, indeed.
3 days.
3 days. If you go, if you type in Garden Expo or go to the Larry Mueller Show at WPR.org, we're going to have some information on it. But the three of us are appearing together Saturday morning at 9:30.
Yes, indeed.
That's going to be fun again.
Yeah, we always have fun doing that.
Are you going to have some slides for us again?
Yeah, I'll bring the... I have a slide presentation. I don't really put up with what I consider cool diseases, and I've interspersed that with slides from Lisa, which are pretty plants. So we all have our different definitions of pretty.
It's really... Garden Expo is really a lot of fun, particularly after this cold, miserable weather that we've had. It's so much fun to go to the Expo Center in Madison, or just on the edge of Madison, I guess you could say, and it smells great, it's warm, there's all kinds of plants and everything gardening imaginable. And then there are these, some experts at least, Lisa and Brian, and I tag along, and we do our little shtick at 9:30 in the morning on Saturday. We always have a big crowd. I always bring along several amazing gifts that we draw for
nice swag.
Lots of books and some cool things that we kind of give away the hour that we're talking. So hope you'll come. And then let's see, I know Mark Dwyer later is going to talk from the Rotary Garden. He's one of our guests. Melinda Myers is going to be talking later on in that day. Ben Fuda is going to be on, and you guys have individual presentations as well.
I have three presentations I'm giving in addition to the one that we're doing together. So I'm giving two talks on diseases of trees and shrubs, and then a general disease management talk. So I've got talks Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
I'm only doing two other than Larry's. I've got hostas and friends, which is hostas and companion plants, and then growing tomatoes in Wisconsin.
So there you go. And when Lisa and Brian and I are together, we run it kind of like a garden talk show, mm-hmm. too. So you can ask your questions on the spot. We'll give you some answers. And most of them will be right.
Hopefully so. And both Lisa and I will have booths in the main display area. So I'm booth 833 and 834 for anyone who wants to stop by and say hi. We'll have lots of fact sheets on plant diseases and some real live plant diseases that you can take a look at, and hopefully it'll be nice and informational for folks.
It's always a lot of fun, and we're looking forward to it. So the three of us will be there 9:30 on Saturday morning for 50 minutes or an hour, I guess.
Hour, I believe.
Hour we've got. And so I hope you come out and see us. Well, let's take some more calls. Lots of callers online. Bill and Madison up next. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call and the tickets. I'm excited. This is great.
Great.
We like to hear that.
Somebody answered my question, one of them, on strawberries that I wasn't thinking about, but that's great. I put too much straw in mine, obviously. And when it warms up here, I'll pull a little off. But raspberries and my black raspberries, cane borers driving me crazy. And I look for the ring now in the fall, and I clip off the top when I see them wilting, because mm-hmm. that's where
yep.
I believe the mother, the female's laying the eggs, correct?
Right. Yeah, between those two sets of punctures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else? On the kid on the farm, of course, we always use rotenone. I think that's not really a good thing anymore.
No, that's, there's some possible.
Don't do that, Bill.
Yeah, that's not good. Boy, it's, you know, it's one of those insects that tends to come in waves. So we, you know, we have a lot of it one year and then we don't have a whole lot the next year. Usually I tell people to do exactly what you're doing because it's just, it's really hard to justify, you know, when you have like among 10 plants, you might have two that are affected, spraying for them. And also once the insect is, you know, once the egg is laid in the stem, your spray is not going to help. So you'd have to rely on the adults being around, and they probably are not going to be around. So spraying is usually not a good option for that particular pest.
Does that help you out, Belle?
Yeah, typically fall is when they're laying the eggs the most. Because they're all coming from within, right? They're not coming from the outside in, boring.
Okay, now you're not talking about crown borer, are you? That
No, bottom? Cane borer's in my raspberries, correct.
Okay, yeah, okay. I believe they lay their eggs in the spring because you tend to see the wilting occurring sometime like early summer. Or like end of May, beginning of June. Where are you again here?
Madison.
You're in Madison. Okay. I was thinking if you were in the upper part of the state, it might be later on. But I have a talk that I give on raspberries, and I'm trying to remember the timing on that particular critter. But I seem to remember that it's sometime in May that it lays the eggs, and then you start to see the larva. Well, as soon as it lays the eggs, you're going to see, because it punctures the vascular system, you're going to see the wilting fairly soon. So that's when you cut below where you see those two rings.
All right. There we go. Yeah. Bill, thank you.
And I'll also plug, we talked about the growing grapes in Wisconsin. There's also growing raspberries in Wisconsin as well. So if you go to the Learning Star website and do a search on raspberries, you'll pop up that book, and that should have some information on that insect as well.
Yeah, it has a number of pests, crown borer as well as cane borer.
So just type in UW Learning Star. Learningstar.uwex.edu. That's the
all together now.
There you go, Bill. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Mary in Monroe has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Mary.
Well, good afternoon. Well, I think you may have started to answer my question. It's about, I think they're raspberries, but maybe they're blackberries. We had a bunch of berries when we bought the farm, and they're producing really nicely. But I don't know what they are, and I'm not too sure if I should be cutting them down every year or should I not be cutting them down every year. I'm not sure how to take care of them.
Yeah, that's a problem with inherited raspberries, because you don't know whether they are the so-called everbearing or whether they are the typical, you know, summer bearing. If they are the summer bearing type, then they have a two-year life cycle, and the first year they don't produce any fruit, they just produce leaves and canes, and then the next year they produce the fruit, and then that cane is going to die, so you remove that cane after it has fruited. The problem with the fall or ever-bearing raspberries is that every year they're going to produce a fruiting cane, so you don't want to prune those. And sometimes I've had people that they've grown together and they don't know who's who, and I usually say, okay, either just look at a particular plant if you can, you know, figure out where they are and figure out when it's fruiting. If it's July, it's probably going to be the summer bearing, and if it's later, it's going to be the other. And try and separate them that way, or just give up and start over with something that you know what it is. Now, if you're talking about blackberries, what color are the fruits that you're harvesting?
They're very dark. That's why I want to call them blackberries.
Okay.
Black raspberry. Yeah, probably black raspberries.
Are they round? And are the canes like really exuberant, or are they, you know, hip level or so?
Oh, no. They're really, really long and skinny and just all over the place. And
yeah, the other thing you could do is look at the fruit. So if you pop the fruit off of the plant, if it leaves a little white, like looks like a thimble-like structure, that's a raspberry.
Right. And if it doesn't, then that's a blackberry. You could have blackberries. There are some that are thornless. There are some that are not as hardy as others. So not really sure what you have. If you could take a photo for me and send it to me, I could take a look at it next year. And then I could better advise you on the pruning of that.
Yeah.
You can just, if you just Google Lisa Johnson, Dane County, you should come up with me.
All right. There you go, Mary. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have Sue in Sparta with something. Let's go there. Hi, Sue. Sue, are you there?
Oh, yeah. Hello, Larry.
Hi. Sorry we kept you waiting so long. You're probably daydreaming a little bit as you waited.
You're on my car phone, so I'm driving.
Oh, okay.
Be safe.
Yeah.
We're just going around the block so I can get home.
Okay. So what have you got for us?
We have a willow that's pretty young. It's like 10 years old.
Okay.
It always sheds. But you were talking about breakage because of the weather. It's extremely breaking a lot. I mean, my husband goes out there and tries to pick up all the branches continually every day. Would that be an indication that is killing the willow tree?
Well, a lot of willows will die back quite a bit. Do you know what kind it is by chance?
I want to say it's a what they call the Wisconsin willow.
Okay, so like a big weeping willow type of thing?
Right, yes.
Okay. I think they're called weeping willows because
they just drop branches all the time.
Weep branches. Yeah, it's a very weak wooded plant. I wouldn't necessarily be really concerned about it. Even if there is dieback, most likely, unless you've got some canker issues, and that is, I'll let Brian talk about that. But usually it doesn't indicate that the plant is in big trouble. And the older it gets, I hate to tell you, the worse. You're going to have more mass and more issues with that.
How does the canopy look? Even
hear it from my husband all the time. When is it?
He planted it, and now he's got to sit out there and pull all those branches up. Well, he's going to be doing that for the rest of that tree's life.
Yeah.
What about those cankers?
We do see canker diseases. So these are diseases that they're usually fungal, and the fungus infects the branch and girdles it, and then the tip of the branch will die back. I see a lot of that on willows, but with many of the willow species, they grow so rapidly that they're able to produce new branches and new foliage, and they usually don't have a huge impact on the tree. The main thing would be if those would happen to get into a main branch or a main trunk, and then we can have problems. But willows get tons and tons of canker issues, and they survive quite well. So I wouldn't be overly concerned.
So if your husband is really not liking this tree, you might just want to take it out and put something else in its place.
Especially if it's near your house or hanging over a picnic table or anything like that, because, like I said, they are weak-wooded. If you cut it down, though, you're probably going to have to apply Roundup or something to the trunk, because otherwise it will just sprout back up again.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling, Sue. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County, one of our guests. The other, Brian Huddleston, Director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guests Lisa Johnson and Brian Huddleston. Great to have them back. Thank you so much for joining in. Just to let you know, Saturday, February 2nd, and Sunday is Orchid Quest 2019. We talked about it last week on the show. So there's displays of orchids like you just would not believe. There's orchid growers there, educational speakers. It's held at Olbrich Botanical Gardens on Atwood Avenue in Madison from Saturday from 9 to 4 and Sunday from 10 to 3. And I've visited many times Orchid Quest, and I usually walk away with an orchid or two. Because you can buy them there. You can buy anything you need to grow orchids. And so Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 4 on Saturday, and Sunday, 10 to 3. And as long as we're on dates, Lisa, you've got some training things for Master Gardeners, do you?
Yeah. We're going to be holding our trainings on Monday nights this year. Our first class will be February 25th, but you do need to attend a mandatory orientation session. We've got two of those left. One is on February 14th and one is on the 19th. So you might want to check the Dane County UW Extension website. And if you're interested in serving your community and learning more about horticulture, Master Gardener Program is a great place to do both of those things. We also, if you're not as able to do the volunteer component, we do have Green Thumb gardening classes as well. Going to be covering 9 different topics, and so check those out at the website as well. Everything from seed starting to backyard chickens to flower gardening. We'll have Ben Fuda talking about landscape design. Should be a lot of fun. Those will be on Thursdays, February 21st through April 18th.
Oh, wonderful. I have a friend, a good friend, Connie, who moved from Door County to San Francisco area, and she's a master gardener here, but now she's got to go to master gardener classes there.
Oh, yeah. Whole different ecosystem, whole different, yeah.
Oh, man. And for Orchid Quest, again, if you go to Olbrich Botanical Gardens, you can learn some more about them, about that event as well, right there. Let's take a call now from Marlene in Green Lake. Marlene, thanks for calling.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I have an answer to when to dig horseradish.
Oh, good.
An old friend who's probably about 80 now said you can dig horseradish any month that has an R in it.
That the ground is not frozen, right?
Well, if you can get at it, we're in Illinois at the time, so maybe in Illinois you can dig it in January, February, or March.
There you go.
But March would be the first time probably here in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So, Marlene, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I appreciate that call. Well, let's go to Joan in Viroqua next. Hi, Joan.
Hello. I have some older Concord grapevines, and I don't know how to take care of them. I was wondering how to prune them and when.
Okay. Usually you're going to be pruning grapevines in about the middle of March, but I really suggest that you check out the Learning Store publication called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin if you're not sure how to take care of them, because that will tell you everything in terms of not only pruning, but disease, insect issues, watering, fertilizing, the whole nine yards. It's a really good publication put together by some of our UW Extension specialists.
So that's Growing Grapes in Wisconsin, available at the UW Learning Store.
Yeah, part of the thing about the pruning is that there are different styles of pruning, which can be used for different types of grapes, and depending on how robust your, it sounds like you've probably got a pretty robust old plant, different type of pruning that you may want to look at.
All right.
It's easier to see in a picture than
yeah,
it
really
explain
is. Joan, does that help?
I was wondering, is it typical to take them down to the roots?
No. You definitely don't want to do that. You want to leave on some of the cordons. Usually, at least three to six. I think is. I'm not sure though for Concord what the number of cordons that they recommend is.
So best to get a copy of that Growing Grapes in Wisconsin from the UW Learning Store, and you get all you need to know
If you're not hooked up to the internet, my recommendation, you're in Viroqua, so you could visit your county extension office, and they might have some of those in stock, or if not, they might be able to order for you.
Yeah,
and there'd be plenty of time if you do it now. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Joan. Appreciate it. Rana in Rice Lake, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I am so happy to be able to talk with you and your guests. My problem is not disease or related, it's husband related.
I don't know whether that's in my purview there.
well, let's just see. I just need some suggestions. We live in a very forested area, and I love trees as much as he does. And as you know, trees grow taller and rounder, and their roots grow deeper as they mature. Well, the trees are growing so tall and they're thick that they're starting to choke out our daylight, and I have more moss in the yard than I do grass, and more shade-loving perennials than I do care to have. And I just would like to trim down and selectively trim out with an arborvitaeus some of those branches, just to allow some more daylight through. And I need some suggestions on how to convince him that it's not going to destroy everything.
So what kind of trees are these that you're looking at?
Oh, my gosh. We have everything. We have birch and popple and oak and maple.
Okay,
so not fir trees.
Yeah.
No. Well, we do have some pine on the edge of our property. However, they're so short because once noon comes and the sun goes on the other side of the forest grove, there's not a speck of sunlight for them.
Yeah. Well, thinning a crown is not necessarily a bad idea, particularly if you have something like a double leader or some kind of structural issue. I usually don't recommend like wholesale slaughter. But what would be the best thing to do would be to get an arborist, a certified arborist from the Wisconsin Arborists Association, to come out and take a look and give you some advice on that. I've had a little bit of that kind of pruning done in my yard, but I have a tree that's on its way out, so we're selectively removing branches. So that's the kind of thing I'm assuming that you're talking about is selective removal. And when a tree gets to a certain size, if the branch is a certain size, it's not advised to make cuts that are just for that purpose if it's too big, because it makes such a big wound and that can potentially allow disease in. So that's why I think you really ought to have a certified arborist look at it, because he or she can give you advice based on the age of the tree, the species of the tree. Like with oaks, you don't want to prune from April through November, and they can just be able to tell you what kinds of cuts and where might achieve your purposes, or maybe it's not possible based on the type and size of the tree.
So a certified arborist.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So Wisconsin, do a search online of the Wisconsin Arborists Association. It's www.waa-isa.org.
Oh my gosh, can't you just
try it in harmony
next
time?
we refer to that one quite often. And yes, you do want a certified arborist, because they've had a lot of additional training that provides them with more expertise to do their job well. So definitely, and you should have a fair amount. You're in Rice Lake, so you're up in an area where there should be a good selection of folks that you could contact.
And that website will also allow you to choose an arborist in your area and choose different sorts of
services.
Yes.
Yeah.
Different sorts of services. Does that help out, Rana?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. Now I have some ammunition.
All right.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Set up there World War III here.
Thank you so much for calling. You know, just to move back to rubber trees for a minute, Mike emailed to say rubber trees are easily air layered. So
good to know.
That's very good to know. Jeff in Sparta wonders about his crabapple tree. Gets lots of gypsy moths on it. Any suggestions for him?
I'm wondering if they aren't actually tent caterpillars, or forest tent caterpillars, depending on what time of year. But gypsy moths don't build nests. They don't build those webs. So if it gets the webs, then it's probably the other thing.
And those, you can, I guess you can just remove them?
You can just pluck them out, put on a protective glove, and watch for those, all the webbing, and catch that early, and just, you can just reach in and grab the stuff.
And do it late in the afternoon or early evening when they're all back in the nest.
In the nest. And Linda says, will the cold weather kill the squash borers?
Huh. Sorry. Probably not.
Unfortunately, the squash borer will survive even 50 below. Oh, my goodness me. Well, I tell you what. Our guest today, Lisa Johnson, is a UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. Brian Huddleston is the director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. He's in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and pleased to have with me today Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, and Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the UW-Madison. He's part of the Department of Plant Pathology at UW. Great to have them along. With their broad areas of expertise, excuse me, we can talk just about anything relating to the garden. And so if you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Lori in Green Bay next. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I just wanted to warn that lady who wants to cut all her trees down to let some light in that she's also going to be getting light for the weeds, too. I have an area that has a lot of moss in it, and, well, it's just a small area, and that's the best area. I mean, the worst weed is grass to try to control that, and what I've got in this mossy area is snake root, and they're beautiful for shade and a mossy area, and they flower late in the summer, early fall, and they smell wonderful, they're beautiful, and it's just a great plant for a shaded area.
Now, what is it again?
Snake root.
I wouldn't recommend it though, because it's pretty aggressive. It is snake root, not bishop's weed, right?
No, this is. It looks like a large version of a stilbe.
Hmm.
So it's they're native.
Okay. Yes, there is a native called snake root. It's used to be a eupatorium, but now they've moved it into a different, I can't remember what the new Latin name is for it, but...
Well, that one should be fine.
Yeah, but it's aggressive.
It's pretty aggressive, yeah. I've had that come up as volunteers in my backyard, which is quite shaded, and it tends to take over quite a bit, so you have to be a little cautious with it.
I hope, though, that the person that we were talking to earlier didn't think that I was advising wholesale cutting down trees. I was advising selective removal of some branches.
Yeah, that makes more sense. But Lori, thanks. Appreciate your call. Did you have anything else? Sorry.
No, I just wanted to say that as far as...
Yeah, it's a really good point because, nature abhors a vacuum, right? So something will move in.
For sure. Thanks, Lori. Appreciate it. Well, Sandy in Iron County, we go to you next. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. My question is about rhubarb. I have a plant, several plants that I brought up from southeastern Wisconsin to extreme northern Wisconsin. So they're off of plants from the 50s.
Wow.
And I want to move them. Now, they've been here in Iron County for 20 years.
Okay.
And I wanted to move them. Is that smart or not so smart?
No, that's all right.
Rhubarb is tough. I wouldn't worry about it. I think you could definitely move it. The one thing that we're cautioning people, though, about is if you have jumping worms, you don't want to move those with whatever it is that you're growing. So we're cautioning people not to bring plants up anymore from the southern part of the state, because we've got a lot of jumping worm problems down here. But if you're just moving them around up there,
I wouldn't worry about
it. Yeah, wouldn't worry about it.
All right. Thanks, Andy. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too. Boy, we got open lines. Get you on pretty quickly. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Marianne in Cashton emailed to say that with the warm spells this winter, her tulip and daffodil bulbs in the garage started to grow. They're about an inch and a half tall. Can she put them in a colder spot till spring, or should she just throw them out?
Well, she wouldn't have to throw them out. I'm just wondering how well they're doing now, though. If it's an unheated garage and they froze in the extreme cold, then they might not be worth very much. What she should do is check them and see, you know, if they're brown or mushy, then they should be tossed. But generally keeping them around, you know, 35 degrees, 40 degrees, usually if they're not in a pot, you'd prefer them not to freeze solid. Because that usually doesn't turn out well.
But you could put them in pots if they're not.
You could certainly do that and force them. Yeah.
And we have a fact sheet on forcing bulbs as well. So
yeah, that's a nice one.
Yeah. So if you go to my clinic website and go into the fact sheet section, I believe it's called forcing bulbs, and so it'll tell you about temperatures and length of time depending upon the type of plant and how to pot them up and prepare them for forcing in the wintertime.
Yeah, and why not?
Yeah, since they're halfway there.
Given the weather that we've had, anything blooming indoors would be lovely at this point.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So there you go, Marianne. I hope you'll follow up on that. And if you want to see a lot of plants, Garden Expo's coming up in a week, and you'll have a chance to see. Okay, I bet you there'll probably be, my phone's ringing. Because I forgot to turn it off. Oh, my goodness me. Anyway, at Garden Expo, some of those publications that we've been talking about today, you're going to have, or others are going to have there.
Yes. I'll have all of the disease-related University of Wisconsin garden facts. Lisa, I'll have a selection of some of the general horticulture ones. Mm-hmm. And they'll be available at our booths.
Yes. My booth number is 731 if you want to come visit. And yours is?
833 and 834.
And you can hear us at 9:30 on Saturday morning. The three of us will be together for a little presentation for an hour. Get to win some fabulous prizes and look at all those great slides that Brian has for us. And, of course, he can and Lisa can answer your questions as well. I'm there mostly for the drawing and talk in between a little bit. Let's go to Ron in Mauston next. Hi, Ron.
Hi. Hey, I bought half a dozen Zestar apple trees last year. I got them from a nursery, took them out of the pots and planted them. And I put this split tube around the stem. And then I put one bag of mulch around them. And I'm just wondering, will they survive this temperature?
So you're in Mauston.
Yeah. I hope so.
My comment would be happy if you don't see any dieback, particularly with newly transplanted materials. It's very stressful when they're transplanted, so you may get some damage, unfortunately. But let's cross our fingers and hope not. Yeah, I'd be a little bit worried about the piping around the trunks.
Yeah, that should be removed in the during the growing season. You put that on to keep the rodents off in the winter, and then you need to take it off in the spring because otherwise the trunk can eventually get girdled as it grows and the tube does not.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Ron. Appreciate your call. Well, let's go to Laurel in Coleman next. Hi, Laurel.
Hi. What I want to know is, I planted a fall a hydrangea, kind of a faller one, $45 worth. But anyway, then the deer come along, I think, and have been gnawing on it a little bit. So I put a plastic planting pot over top of it so they could eat it down to the ground. But and that was after it froze. And now, you know, with this heat, we're supposed to almost get 50 degrees. Should I take that pot off? And when it gets cold again, put it back on?
Yeah, that. Where are you located?
45 miles north of Green Bay.
Okay. Wow. So we're buried in snow down here, so I was trying to visualize the situation. Is this a hydrangea that has a white bloom?
It's kind of pinkish and white.
Okay.
Smaller bloom.
Is it one that blooms like a teardrop shape? And is it later in the summer?
I think it would be later in the summer. And the blooms aren't real big, and I don't think it gets real big either.
Okay. So it might be a dwarf of some kind. The reason that I ask is I was trying to figure out whether it might bloom for you even with the damage, but I'm not real sure on which type it is. Is it supposed to get a pink or a blue bloom?
Pinkish, but white and yeah.
It sounds more like a panicle type. So if that's the case, it probably will grow out because it blooms on new wood later in the year and you might still get blooms on it. But if it's a big leaf hydrangea, if it's any of the endless summer series, which are our woody specialist refers to as endless bummer because they often don't perform as advertised in our area. If you're not worried about the deer getting it while it's uncovered, you could go ahead and do that. I don't really think, though, if it's been freezing, then I don't think you'd need to take it off.
All right. Does that help, Laurel?
I hope so. And can I ask another question? I have an avocado that started in my compost pile.
Oh, cool.
It was probably about 2 feet high or
so. Wow.
I put it in a pot, and then in the fall I put it in the basement, and I just water it now and then. Do you think anything is it going to live?
Did it drop leaves or?
Yes, it dropped leaves in the fall, just like it would.
Okay. Huh?
Is it getting sunlight down there?
Well, no. Uh-uh.
So you're trying to make it dormant?
Dormant, so that if I bring it out in the spring.
I'm not sure that they go dormant.
No, I think you need to have it in the sun.
I'm trying to remember with avocados, but I didn't think they went dormant. Have you scratched the bark to see whether...
No.
If you scratch the bark and it's green, you're still good. And I would try bringing it upstairs and putting it in a sunny place.
Okay.
And away from windows where it's cold.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Well, he had the limey, but limes don't limes go through that? Doesn't every tree go through that where they drop their leaves and then they come back, even if they're in real warm areas?
No. If it's a tropical plant, it wouldn't do that, which is what I'm thinking the avocado is.
Yeah, my lime tree actually flowers and produces fruit like crazy when I bring it in from in the fall before the first frost usually. And I never do anything with it. I just leave it and I fertilize it regularly with fish emulsion fertilizer. Every time I water it, I put a little fish emulsion fertilizer in with it, and so it just gets a little steady organic fertilizer. Well, that's what I do with limey. And I'm going to be harvesting about 10 limes for this weekend for the Super Bowl. There you go, Laurel. Thanks so much for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quick. Dan in Allenton, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hello. I have a question for you on a big leaf linden tree. I think it's also called a basswood tree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's about 14 inches in diameter, and I don't know how tall, but it's a pretty big size tree. And over the years at my friend's house, I've noticed this seam that runs up the side of the tree, you know, like it had
frost crack.
Yeah. Before. Yeah. Well, now this year I drive up and it's split about 14 feet up, and in the bottom section of it, I can stick my index finger in there, probably an inch. It's really opened up this year. Is there anything you should do with that, or just let it go, or?
Not much you can do
for frost cracks. Those oftentimes develop on trees that are under a lot of stress, and part of the stress can sometimes be girdling roots.
Yeah, if it was planted too deeply.
So I would check around the base of the tree to see if you see any evidence of roots that are growing around the trunk. Those will, when the trunk gets bigger and bigger, they tend to kind of constrict the water conducting tissue under the bark, and that will cause a lot of stress in the tree. And then if we get a lot of variable temperatures during the wintertime, that'll cause a break in the bark. So once you get those, there's not much you can do. The main thing I would watch is if you see any evidence of water or moisture collecting in the area, try to keep it as dry as possible, because if there's a lot of moisture, then you run the risk of wood rot fungi getting established in the wood of the tree, and then that will cause some structural abnormalities and weaknesses that can make the trees more prone to blowing over or breaking off.
Yeah, and you can tell somewhat if the tree has been planted too deep, if it goes straight into the ground like a telephone pole instead of flaring out at the base.
Yeah, that's the sure sign. Does that help, Dan?
It does. It does flare out at the base, but it's been in there, I don't know, for a long, long time. And I'm just wondering, it's pretty close to the house, too, and they do have a predilection to break off as they get bigger and bigger. They're not real strong, but that doesn't necessarily weaken the tree. It'll grow back shut. And
it may or may not. And it could. I would worry about weakening of the tree with the crack. But sometimes they will close over. Other times they will not.
I'd have a certified arborist out to take a look at that and assess it for structural integrity.
Particularly since it's so close to the house.
Right.
It could cause a lot of damage.
All right. Dan, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. We'd love to hear from you. So what do you like best about the Garden Expo, Brian?
I love all the people. It's a lot of fun to talk to people from all over the state, and a lot of them know me because I've been on your show. So they'll come and say, oh, we've heard you, or we've heard you give a talk somewhere in the state. And so it's nice to chat with them. And I have a lot of fun. I enjoy it. It's a tough 3 days because you have to be kind of on the entire 3 days, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Lisa, what about you? Same for you?
I enjoy that a lot. I've got to say I enjoy the shopping as well. But yeah, the only thing I always have to worry about is, am I going to lose my voice
from all the talk?
From all the talking.
It's a lot of fun, and it's next week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Dane County Expo Center. And you can go online to Wisconsin Public Television site, or just type in Wisconsin Garden Expo, and it's going to pop up, and you'll get all the information. There's so many presentations. It's just amazing.
Yeah. And now they're calling it, I think, Garden and Landscape Expo.
Yes, I noticed that.
So
got that in there as well. Well, let's take another call. Colin in Madison, your turn. Hi, Colin. Oh, we lost Colin.
Aww.
Well, let's go to Christy in Green Bay. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Larry. I just love what you do. We have fire blight in our apricot trees.
Yeah, actually, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I just don't know what I can do for that.
Yeah. Technically, it wouldn't be fire blight. It's a similar disease. Both fire blight is a bacterial disease that goes to apples and pears and some other types of rosaceous woody plants. But when you're talking about plums and cherries and apricots in the genus Prunus, it's a disease called bacterial canker. It functions very, very similarly. Part of the problem with apricots is they're not in many, many times that well adapted to our climate. So they tend to get a lot of cold injury, and it's those wounds that provide an entry point for the bacteria to get in to the trees that will cause additional damage. Basically, if you have this bacterial canker, typically on the branches are blobs of sap that will ooze out. And if you see that, the only thing you can really do is prune down about 12 inches below where you see that obvious symptom of the disease. And oftentimes that means you're pruning into the main trunk, which means you remove the tree, unfortunately. Apricots, when you're planting them, if you want to try those, they need to be in a really protected area because they can get a lot of damage from winter injury, particularly as you move farther north. But there are no chemical treatments really for bacterial canker, because the bacterium that causes the disease, it actually lives naturally on the surface of leaves, at least one of them that causes the problem. So definitely the organism is around just waiting for an opportunity to get into the branches.
Oh, sad news for you.
Sorry about that.
Appreciate your call very much. Thank you so much for calling. I did want to mention, you know, we've been talking about the Garden and Landscape Expo, but that's a week from now. But tomorrow, if you're in the Madison area, the Orchid Growers Guild of Madison presents Orchid Quest 2019. It's at Olbrich Botanical Gardens. I love that place, a member there, family membership there, and it's always a good time just to go there. But now you're going to get to see some unusual orchids from around the world. There's lots of displays. There's knowledgeable orchid growers there. There's educational speakers. There's some fabulous vendors. You can buy orchids or anything relating to orchids while you're there. They have a raffle and a silent auction, and they have some many presentations as well. Have you been? Lisa, have you heard?
You know, I have always ended up working the weekend of that. I've never been able to go. But this weekend, I might be able to make one of those days.
Yeah. And I've given talks years ago for them. So,
well, it's a lot of fun. So that's Orchid Quest February 2nd and February 3rd, tomorrow and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 4 on Saturday and 10 a.m. to 3. And if you want some more, if you go to orchidguild.org, you're going to find out some more. But please do come and see Brian and Lisa and I at the Garden and Landscape Expo. That's the event is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of next weekend. Not this weekend, but the next one. And we are speaking from 9:30 to 10:30, and we'll be answering your questions. You'll be getting some chances to win fabulous prizes, and Brian will be bringing along his slides showing all those neat diseases and some really cool plants that you might want to plant in your garden this coming year. So all that, 9:30 in the morning, a week from this Saturday for Garden and Landscape Expo. Well, it's been a lot of fun, as always, you two.
Us.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Larry.
We'll get you back. Stay with us.